Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Wonderful. Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Wherever you are, I hope you are having an absolutely fabulous, fabulous day. We're going to be talking about health today, and we're going to be talking about a condition that just about all of us know of at least one person that has it, and that is diabetes. And there's all kinds of statistics and points of information that we're going to be sharing with you during the first part of this program. My guest today is Hope Warshaw, and Hope has a book that she's put together with her associate, Joy Papp, and this is about real life, how you can understand. This is a real life guide to diabetes, and this is practical information that Hope and Joy put together, and maybe this is something you will want to share with someone that you love. Maybe it's a member of a circle of friends that you have. Regardless, anything that can empower someone to enjoy wellness is very important. Hope, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Delighted to be here.
Now, you're a nationally recognized dietitian and certified diabetes educator. You've worked with thousands of people. You like people to know that they can have a realistic lifestyle. They don't feel like they have to be in this imprisoned mentality, that you feel that people can control their lives, their wellness. You are a contributing editor to Diabetic Living. You've done a number of different books with the American Diabetes Association. Joy is a nationally recognized nurse. She's also certified as a diabetes educator and, interestingly, certified foot care nurse, which I found very interesting and different. And she has a very special mission and a passion because in her own family, diabetes is quite strong. So she really had a major, major drive to work with you. And the two of you really came together as a team. This book, Real Life Guide to Diabetes, is really quite interesting to go through. How did the two of you link up to do this, first of all, and how long did it take you to bring all of this information together?
Joy and I have been colleagues for a number of years, and as you said, I've written a number of books with the American Diabetes Association, and this book sort of came to be with talking with ADA and looking at what was needed, and I thought Joy would be a good partner and complement to my expertise as a dietitian. And that's how it came together. And I went to Joy in part because I think she shares the same passion that I have, and that is, you know, there's an awful lot written about what I call textbook diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really how, you know, it should, according to the book, be done. But we both understand that people can only change a certain amount within a certain amount of time, and that life doesn't always go according to plan, and people need to make slow and steady changes towards permanent behavior change. And those are really the framework elements for the book. And so I thought our strong, consistent beliefs would really work well for the book.
Well, I think, again, you have done an outstanding job with this. There is so much color through the book. You've got photographs. You've got all kinds of charts. And I really think that this is invaluable. I mean, I review hundreds of books a year, but when it comes to talking about health, if you get something that's like a reference book in a textbook type of a format, people yawn, put it up on the shelf, and that's it. You're not going to find that they're going to be interested in this. However, you have so many different points here that I think are absolutely excellent, and we're going to be going through some of them. But
I think that it's important. I feel like I can paint a bit of a picture for your listeners. I liken this, the layout of this book, to looking at a page on a website.
I was just going to say that, yes.
Yeah, that was really our mission, was to sort of come up with boxes and sort of icons and, you know, not make it so text heavy, but that we've got tips and tactics and answers to questions and myths and facts and red flags and charts and graphs. And I think it really does break up the page and make sort of that morsel learning easier.
I agree with that. Now, diabetes has been around forever. There, to the best of our knowledge and our written records, there have been there's been the awareness of the diabetic condition. And in what I'd call the more cultured societies that had availability of flours and sugars and this type of thing, people could end up with this. And I remember reading a long time ago about physicians, how they'd smell the urine of someone determine this, because it would have a sweet smell to it.
I mean, many, many years ago.
A long time ago, centuries ago. But let's give some statistics that you have in the book. In the U.S., 24 million people have diabetes, 18 million are diagnosed, 6 million have it but have not yet been diagnosed, and 90 to 95% of people have type 2 diabetes, 5 to 10% have type 1 diabetes. And let's talk about that for just a minute. Where did you get your stats on this?
The stats, and the best stats, and I use them all the time, are from the Centers for Disease Control, so cdc.gov/diabetes. Look for diabetes facts, and those are the facts that are used by the government, you know, sort of a partnership between NIH and CDC. They last came out August of 2008, but they're called the 2007 statistics. It's a pretty lengthy document. It goes over a lot. I think the other statistic that I like to share, Donna, is the statistic about prediabetes, that there are 57 million people in the U.S. on the road to diabetes. And that's probably a relatively light estimation, because it's a very difficult condition to get our arms around. I mean, these are people who, a good percentage of them with some lifestyle modification, could either prevent or delay progressing to developing type 2 diabetes.
And that's a positioning we all want to take. We want to have that preventative positioning so that we don't develop it. Now, many times it's genetic. I know in my husband's family, most of his siblings, he came from a family that had 10 children, and almost all of them carry the gene for the diabetes condition.
Right, and people are sort of confused about that, the genetics in type 1 and type 2, and actually, the stronger genetics is in type 2 diabetes. And you're correct, if you have a family member, particularly a parent or sibling, with diabetes, then you have increased your likelihood. However, that's only one factor. And it's the lifestyle factors, the sedentary behavior, the putting on the pounds, the unhealthy eating habits, that just sort of add insult to injury, if you will, and have so exponentially increased our rate of both prediabetes and type 2.
You bring a point out in your book that I think is very, very significant. There was a question, does eating too much sugar and sweets cause diabetes? And there isn't a straightforward answer on that. And I like that honesty. That may not be it at all.
Well, I mean, you know, that's sort of an old and common question. Is the sugar cause diabetes? Because when people think of diabetes, formerly called diabetes mellitus, but we hardly ever use that second word anymore, you know, people go, oh, that's sugar. And, you know, how many times have we heard sugar diabetes? And, but it's, the answer is answered in an indirectly because it's a combination. I mean, things that are high in sugar tend to be high in fat and therefore are high. And if you eat too much of those things, you gain weight. And it again comes back to the weight piece that is causative of type 2.
Now, talk to us a little bit about C-peptide. What is C-peptide and how is it related to the condition of diabetes and what organs specifically are affected?
Well, let me just take C-peptide, and it's a fairly minute point, I think, that is more relative to people who are diagnosed with something that there's really not a formal term, but sometimes it's called type 1.5 diabetes. Sometimes it's called latent autoimmune diabetes in adults, or LADA as it's abbreviated. And physicians and providers are questioning, do you really have type 1 or do you really have type 2? And sometimes doing a C-peptide test can help detect if it truly is type 1 diabetes. So C stands for connecting or connecting peptide. It's actually the piece that as humans who don't have diabetes and are making insulin that we make as part of the insulin molecule. And as it's used, the C-peptide gets cleaved off before the insulin is utilized. Insulin that comes in a vial or comes in a pen that people take has no C-peptide. If you, as a person with diabetes, are making ostensibly no insulin, then you will have a very low C-peptide. So it's a test that can be done.
Now, let's talk about knowing and controlling your ABCs, and this is a part of your book. You have particular lab tests that people can take to find out what they need to know so they can manage the diabetes. And then there's an A1C test that you can compare to your average blood glucose and recording numbers. Talk to us about this because for those of us that have known people with diabetes, they will have maybe these little units, these portable units, where they will check their blood periodically. Talk to us about this.
Okay. Well, let's go back a bit to the ABCs, and that has sort of become the nomenclature around control of A being blood glucose, sort of using that A for of A1C, B for blood pressure, and C for cholesterol or blood lipids. The way that we have evolved over the last, I would say, particularly 10 years, is, you know, it used to be that everyone's focus in diabetes care was on blood glucose. And where we've evolved to is recognizing, particularly in type 2 diabetes, but all the way through, is that you will stay healthy for the long term if you control your blood glucose, your blood pressure, and your blood lipids. So it's no longer just a story of blood glucose control.
Now, talk about blood pressure for a moment, because there are those people that say, oh, blood pressure doesn't mean anything. What are those readings with blood pressure that are significant, and why are they significant? What do they tell someone?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, a huge percentage of people in the U.S. have high blood pressure, and we're beginning, unfortunately, to see children due to obesity have high blood pressure. And about three-quarters of people who have diabetes already have high blood pressure and often have it prior to the diagnosis of diabetes. The goal for blood pressure in diabetes is 130 over 80, which is a little lower than the general population.
All right. I've known many people that in dealing with the diabetes always feel like they're so very alone. And they are almost embarrassed to talk to anyone about it because they just don't want people to feel like they're a burden, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I do entertaining, and I could care less. I mean, I'm more concerned about how people, you know, what their food needs are, etc. Because when I'm a hostess, if I'm preparing the meals then or fixing the menu, I want to know that information so that they're going to be able to enjoy the foods that I serve. And this is something that can be very, very difficult and can be very, very overwhelming for someone. What do you recommend to people when they become aware of this right at the beginning? Because it's always a shock when you're given that diagnosis.
Well, you know, different people respond to the diagnosis differently just because we take who we are as human beings into this diagnosis. And some people are more willing to share. Some people are more quiet about it. You know, so I think that can vary from A to Z, and people's needs around the disease can vary from A to Z as well. I have been as an educator around a lot of people with diabetes professionally, socially, etc. And I know that people handle it differently. Are you wanting to know what can people who support people
do? Well, you have some excellent references in here, routes to diabetes specialists. And this is the first time I have seen this information. It's the NCQA that lists recognized physicians. Do you find sometimes that people will be going to doctors that really do not have a good understanding?
Absolutely.
Is important, and I think...
Yeah, I feel, I mean, unfortunately, the vast majority of people who have diabetes have type 2 and are seeing primary care providers. And that may be nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, physicians, etc., PAs. And by no means am I saying all of those people are incompetent to deal with diabetes. That's not at all what I'm saying, and I don't believe that everyone with diabetes needs to go see an endocrinologist, and unfortunately they're a dying breed. There's only about 3,000 endocrinologists in the entire country. But what I feel strongly about is, if possible, that people who have diabetes become very aware of what the standards of care are, what tests they should have, and we list those all at the end of the Real Life Guide to Diabetes. Know those. Make sure that your physician is implementing those standards of care, that you're having an eye exam every year, that you're having your kidneys checked, that you're having your blood lipids checked, that at every visit they're doing your blood pressure, and that they know, you know, what that should be, that 130 over 80, and you get on medication if you need it. One of our biggest problems, too, is that providers put people on medications, say it's blood glucose-lowering medications, and then they don't go back for 3-6 months to check if they need more of that medication, if they need another medication to help them reach their ABC targets. I would encourage people to continually say, okay, what's my ABC? And if they honestly feel that they are doing what they can with weight management, with healthy eating, with physical activity, those are the lifestyle changes. If you're doing what you can with those and you can't hit your ABC targets, then you need to be on blood glucose lowering medication, blood pressure lowering medication, and blood lipid medication. Medication is not a bad thing. Medication is not something to be avoided. As a dietitian, I would love to think that everyone could manage their type 2 diabetes with lifestyle changes. What we've come to understand is that type 2 diabetes is a progressive disease, and we talk a lot about that in the Real Life Guide to Diabetes. And I mean, I feel like if there's one thing that people need to understand today is not to take type 2 diabetes lightly. In fact, I wish we were doing a lot more to help people diagnose pre-diabetes and do a lot more work with lifestyle actions in people who have pre-diabetes. But it is a progressive disease and needs to be treated as such.
You have a number of tips and tactics, as you describe them, through the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think this is important because we'll see advertisements on television regarding being able to get monitors if people need them. And there are free blood glucose monitor offers. You go into that. You talk about mail order companies that people can utilize for supplies. Diabetic shoes. People that have the progressive level of diabetes, this is something that's very important that they protect their feet, so you have information on that. You talk about lotions, cream. You also go into a section in your book on health care for disabled people, life insurance policies, you know, how to deal with insurance companies. It's just fascinating, all of these details that you have here, Medicare and diabetes for the more mature individuals. There's a question here that's a very significant one. Can someone be turned down for health insurance because of having diabetes? Let's address that question because health insurance is such a big issue in this country right now.
Where that really comes into play is for someone who wants to be self-employed,
mm-hmm.
and to get a policy as a self-employed person can be difficult. If you're part of a large employer or you're talking about Medicare, then more than likely you will not have a problem.
And you go into an advocacy program. You also give information on that so that people can have assistance if they need it. You give the information there in the website.
Right. Well, actually, the American Diabetes Association has done a superb job in advocating for people with diabetes. So we do talk in that chapter about health insurance and disabilities, about some of the process that ADA has taken to sort of smooth the course, if you will, for people with diabetes. There was recently a decision that was settled, and as you know, with law, one case sort of, you know, smoothed the pathway that this was a man who wanted to become he had type 1 diabetes, wanted to become an FBI agent and was refused, and eventually over many years, as legal cases often take, it went to court and the ADA and this person won. So decisions like that really do come a long way in paving the course for people who follow. And I think we can't go today without mentioning our potential Supreme Court justice diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 8 years old, Sonia Sotomayor. So, you know, I think for those of us in the diabetes world, it's always, as much as I don't like hearing that people have diabetes necessarily, but it's always good to hear about people in high places who have achieved amazing things while managing this disease, which is not easy to manage.
There is a study that you speak about in your book showing that costs have climbed 32% since 2002, medical costs, and there's a publication, The Economic Cost of Diabetes in the U.S. in 2007. This was a study that was done. It costs the Americans $174 billion annually. My goodness. That's a tough number to wrap your head around.
It is for diabetes care.
And they say the direct and indirect medical costs of diabetes were estimated at $174 billion annually, including $116 billion in excess medical expenditures and $58 billion in reduced national productivity. They say medical costs to care directly for diabetes are estimated at $27 billion, with about 50% of this total for inpatient care. And people that have diabetes spend over half of their medical expenditures caring for their diabetes. These are just phenomenal numbers. And again, your book goes into so much detail. You talk about losing weight, keeping it off. You go into working with providers that, you know, you may have to deal with, taking care of yourself, being very proactive in working with yourself physically, which, again, I think your book is just a wonderful representation of what people can do for themselves. Now, I do know that there is a website that people can go to. We were talking about this before you went on air with me, and the website is store.diabetes.org. That's store, S-T-O-R-E, dot diabetes, dot org. Now, in addition to information about your book, what else will they find on this website, Hope?
Well, that is the website for the American Diabetes Association store. So they can get any, you know, information about any of the books published by the American Diabetes Association. And people can buy the Real Life Guide from, you know, any of your mortar and brick bookshops or from Amazon.com, you know, any of those. It is available just like any other book. The website of the American Diabetes Association is diabetes.org, and there's a tremendous amount of website of information on that website. People can sign up for e-newsletters and, you know, get really up-to-the-minute information on that website. I think that, you know, people want to continue to be learning. I think that our web has brought us so many avenues, both for learning as well as for connecting. I think that one word of wisdom I would provide is that study after study, whether it's talking about diabetes care, weight control, is showing that in order to implement lifestyle changes and continue those through your life, people need continuous chronic support to do that. Because in reality, we're encouraging people to have to be fish swimming upstream in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy to do. So people need support to be able to continue to do that.
Your book, Real Life Guide to Diabetes, I think is very well done. These are practical answers to diabetic problems. I want to thank you, Hope Warshaw, for being my guest today. And for those of you who would like to get more information, write this website down, store.diabetes.org, store.diabetes.org. Hope, thank you again for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. I enjoyed it.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go anywhere. More good things to share. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the second half of the show. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and chat with me directly, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the telephone number to call in to. It is worldwide. No matter where you are, you can call in and chat if you like. The telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815. 9756. And calling on that number, you will be able to chat with me, but what I'll want from you first is your first name or your initial. And of course, I love to know where you're calling from. And then after that, let me talk to you, tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. It's that simple. Again, 888-815-9756. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about corporations, business. If you are involved in a working environment where you're finding that each generation is being represented, whether it's the baby boomers, Generation X, Y, or Z, or whatever else you want to call them, there's a way we can work together as a team. There doesn't have to be a lot of agitation and aggravation in the process. So we're going to be talking tomorrow with Camille Bishop. Her book is titled, We're in This Boat Together. It is an excellent, excellent publication. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with a physician, Dr. David Dahlman, and the subject matter is, why don't doctors know this? I think you're going to find it quite interesting. That's what our lineup is this weekend. Boy, we're going to be starting off with the month of June. We've got all kinds of fascinating topics, but I'll be telling you more about that tomorrow or Friday. So again, give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call in and chat with me. Television, how significant is it in the lives of people? Well, apparently, there's 151 hours spent a month with the average American that is involved right in front of that television set. And then 60 is the number of hours per month of TV watching associated with 23% higher risk of obesity, and 60, the number of hours per month of TV watching associated with a 14% increased risk of diabetes. 30, the maximum number of hours per month of TV watching recommended for ideal health. I think the issue is here, you don't want to be a couch potato. That's sort of the picture that I'm getting. The key is, in our world today, we drive just about everywhere, and getting up and moving, going out for walks, bicycling, walking again in malls, doing something where we are moving our bodies is not as common as it used to be. When you talk with members of the older generation, you'll find they used to walk to school. Their mothers didn't drive them to school. They might have to walk 3 to 12 miles a day going to and from school. So these are all subtle changes that in our society have evolved, and it's something that all we need to do is make some little shifts, and it can make a big difference for us as far as feeling better for ourselves physically and sort of clearing out the cobwebs. So many of us are in front of computers, and I'm just an avid lover of walking, and I really believe in it. And this is the time of the year when you can go out and do it. It's different if you live in a part of the country where it might be 20 below zero or it's raining so hard like it does here that you don't want to go out and feel like you're going to end up swimming home. So when you've got this time of the year where the weather's beautiful, get up and move. Get up, get out. And if you are going to watch television, I don't have anything against TV, but just remember, you want to take care of yourself so that your health as you grow older is going to be absolutely top notch. And I always like to bring up Jack LaLanne, who has been a guest on my show more than once. Jack LaLanne is 95 years young, and this man religiously exercises 2 hours a day. And when I had him on my show last year, he said he does it to prove things to himself. He doesn't do it to prove anything to anybody else. But he said, here I am at this age in my life. I'm blessed with the fact that I have good health. But he said, I do take care of myself. So that's something you need to keep in mind. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Every day we're hearing on the news how many jobs are being lost. Layoffs happening big time. It's creating, I think, a tremendous apprehension in the minds of so many people. But you can shift that, and you can make yourself aware of the fact that you may have an opportunity to go into a whole different arena of work that maybe you never considered before. Also, you might even decide that you want to start something on your own. The future of work, what is that looking like? Well, some interesting changes seem to be evolving. And I came across this information, and I thought I would share it with you. Are you aware of the fact that the 40-hour work week was established in 1926? One man in particular began that patterning, and it affected business all over the country, even around the world. Who was that man? That man was Henry Ford. Henry Ford is a phenomenal individual because he's the one that developed the assembly line process for the Model T Ford. But more than that, he made sure that he paid his employees more than the going rate. And the employees were able then to afford the automobiles that he was producing. Fascinating man. If ever you want to study history and an aspect of business development in the industrial age, this is a man that you should research because it really does make a difference. But let's go back into the history of the workforce. And between 1100 and 1300, most people were serfs. They were basically slaves. Why? Because the primary need was agriculture. If you couldn't produce food, nobody'd live for very long. So most people were shackled to the land. Even if they did own something of their own, the ways of farming for many, many, many generations were extremely labor intensive. In fact, many people would have large families so that they'd have that support. The women might have died in the process, but they'd have as many kids as they could because those kids, from the time they were about 3 or 4, were put to work. And they were working out in the fields, doing one kind of a job or another. For those that were the serfs, the peasants, well, they had someone that was over them. And, of course, it was an extreme, the very, very poor and the very, very wealthy. Well, when the Industrial Revolution started to evolve, that was in, you know, the late 1800s, 1900s, early 1900s, British workers were pleading for 10-hour days, and also for protection for children. And immigrant teenage girls, it was not unusual for them to work 14 hours a day. And you have to remember that era, that most of them came from Europe into the United States. But there are so many things that when you go back into history, we look at things today and we go, oh, isn't that terrible? But remember, people did not have what we have today. People did not have the literacy we have today. This was a very different world from what we know at this time. And then in 1919, there was a writer, Upton Sinclair. He was the man responsible for putting the term white-collar worker together. And the reason he did that, he said, these are workers, he described them as the petty underlings of the business world. Now, between 1900 and 1950, that segment of our workforce tripled, white-collar jobs tripled. Now, Kellogg, and we're all familiar with Kellogg, they're the cereal makers, the company in 1930 cut back from a 40-hour work week to a 30-hour work week without any loss in activity. In 1938, President Franklin D. Roosevelt established the first minimum wage and 44-hour work week. And in 1965, a Senate subcommittee predicted that automation would lead eventually to a 21st century work week of just 14 hours. Have you ever watched the cartoon show The Jetsons? Remember how he would just work so hard his finger would swell? Yes, because he was pushing buttons. So it seems like we're sort of evolving into that direction. And, my goodness, in 1982, employment in the United States jumped up to 10.8%, a level that hadn't been seen since the Great Depression, and look at what we're experiencing today. In 2000, France adopted a 35-hour work week, and in our country today, that is going to, I think, going to become more of the norm. There are many companies who, with all of the shifts and changes that are going on, they don't want to lay off their employees, so everybody is taking a cut in hours. And economically, it's helping many businesses stay afloat, and it's giving the employees some extra time off that they hadn't anticipated. Are you aware that 34.6 is the amount of hours, the average work week in the USA is, and then in Germany, it's 26 hours, that's the average work week. In South Korea, the average work week is 43.6. Now, I noticed that in this information that's put out, they didn't talk about the self-employed. The self-employed frequently put in a lot more hours than that, but that is the average worker. And do you know that $850,000 is the amount that unscheduled sick and personal days off cost a typical large United States company annually? And 4 in 10 employees do not typically take a lunch break. 55% take a half hour or less. This is something about the American individual. I don't know why we do this. I think it's because we have adopted, if you work harder, it's going to work out better for you. And taking breaks from work are extremely important. It's been shown through numerous studies that when you take a 15-minute break a couple of times during an average work day and you have a half hour for lunch or an hour for lunch, you have a chance to become more productive by doing those breaks. But you know what? Unemployment for March 2009 was 8.5%, but they are guesstimating that it's more like 15.6% for unemployment, because if you account the unemployed temporary workers, part-timers who want more work, and job seekers who maybe feel like they're not going to find anything real quickly. Anyway, those are just some stats, but there is definitely a direction of change going for shorter weeks. And the shrinking work week, I think it's going to be evolving. But again, I have to tell you, when you're self-employed, it's not that frequently that you have a 5 or 6 hour day. Usually you put in a lot more hours because you're the one that's taking care of business. So it's just fascinating studies, and we'll see how things evolve in the coming years. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, how about Beetleborgs? The Pentagon's involved in this research. I'll be sharing some of that with you, and a little bit of this and a little bit of the other. But if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756 is the number to dial into worldwide. I'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Have you ever seen a program about dolphins and blowing bubbles? Well, someone sent me an email on this, and it was mesmerizing. And it's all about beluga whales. Now, who knew that beluga whales could blow bubbles? Now, this is the story behind it. And, again, the film that I was sent, I believe it was on YouTube. I could be wrong. But, anyway, I was just mesmerized watching this magnificent animal swimming about in its tank and creating these bubbles and then playing with the bubbles. Well, in the Aqua Aquarium, the Aquas Aquarium in Hamada City in Japan, there was a trainer that was observing their beluga whale casually blowing rings in the water. Well, by observing them, they thought, maybe we can teach them to do this on command. So that's what they did. They taught them to do it on command. Now, these whales, what they were doing, whenever anyone was in their scuba gear, in their tanks, they often were very disruptive. They'd play with the tanks. Well, they would respond to the person that was in the water with them. Now, the three whales, their names were Kelia, Alia, and Nastia. They started taking in air from the trainer's oxygen tank. But again, they liked to play with them. So they found they were biting into too many of the regulator tubes, and that could be a little pricey. So these three beluga whales were taught instead to take in the air that their trainer blows directly at their mouth. And there is a saying in Japan that if you're fortunate enough to witness the spectacle of the balloon being formed, you're going to have good luck in marriage and conception. Oh, boy, I hope that I saw that. I hope that doesn't happen to me. I've already got the good marriage, and at this time in my life, conception is the last thing I'm interested in. So... I hope we can add something different to that particular belief that they're enforcing there. But regardless, it's amazing to watch the animals doing what they're doing. Now, they said they are now finding that they can teach belugas to talk in recognizable sound when it sees particular objects like goggles or buckets. And this is at another SeaWorld in Kamogawa. So there's all kinds of competition now, apparently in Japan, because of these very talented animals. Who would have thought that we would be having this kind of a communication effect with beluga whales? But that's just some fun information. And again, if anybody sends you the video on it, it is awesome to watch. Absolutely awesome. And these creatures, of course, are just so beautiful anyway. To see them in the water is just absolutely a joy. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. And don't forget, tomorrow we're in this boat together with Camille Bishop. Yes, multi-generational communication, good thing. Oh, I almost forgot. I wanted to thank Katie for having me as a guest on her show, Spiritual Hollywood, last night. It was a wonderful program. We had a great hour together. And I know that the program is in the archives. We were on from 6 to 7 Pacific time last night, and it was terrific. So if you have a chance, go on into Katie's archives and listen to the show. We were able to have callers as well, but we shared a lot of information regarding intuition, the development of things, the tools that you can use to develop your skills. And again, it was a wonderful hour, and I want to thank Katie for having me again as a guest. Okay, Beetleborgs. That's right. They are for real. Their first wireless flying insect, Cyborg. You think this is out of science fiction? Not anymore. This is for real. This is a remote-controlled beetle. It has been developed by engineers at the University of California at Berkeley, and I've got a picture of it in front of me, and it is incredibly impressive. It's a six-legged biomechanical hybrid. Now, this beetle can fly beautifully, rise, hover, fly on command. It's guided by a radio receiver that relays signals to electrodes connected to the insect's optic lobes and flight muscles. They have demonstrated the beetle at a conference in Italy this year. Now, it has the mind of a machine, but the body of the insect is extremely flexible. They feel that this bug bot may be the perfect scout. It's inexpensive to make. If it dies, who cares? And it's capable of serendipitous reconnaissance. And the Berkeley researchers note that the beetles, as small as they are strong enough to carry useful payloads, such as a miniature camera. Ah, yes, yes, yes. No longer sci-fi. Now, there's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is funding this. Its short description is DARPA. It's also sponsoring research on ways to implant insects with machinery during the early stages of their lives. And we all know about butterflies and how they can fly thousands of miles without feeding. Well, a cyborg version would be a good candidate for long-range missions, and caterpillars. They think they can modify them to grow into adults that look like regular butterflies but have embedded wires and electrodes, allowing humans to control their flight. That's not the end of it. Dragonflies are also on their list. They can reach 45 miles per hour in their speed. They might use them for high-speed missions. And the moth, there's a big one, 10-inch wingspan. They might want to make it into a miniature cargo ship. This is for real, folks. This is what they think up. Well, we've got a wonderful, wonderful evening ahead of us, and I hope wherever you are just enjoying yourself immensely. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy your day. You're rich with purpose, and you are very, very special. Just know you make a difference in other people's lives by being the best of who you are. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking to you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.